next semester. So here's our setting. And I'll start with one example of where the things I'm going to talk about are useful. They're useful in slightly broader settings, but let's just get something pinned down. So we've got two parties, Alan and Bonnie, who have a secret W, and it's not necessarily uniform, and they want to agree on a uniform secret R out of it. And then they want to use that uniform secret R for whatever they want to use uniform secrets, like you know, encryption and MACs and so on. Why is W not uniform? It's not necessarily that it's hard to get uniform randomness. It's that the adversary may know something about the secret that you don't know what the adversary knows. Okay? If you don't know what the adversary knows, then the secret automatically becomes non-uniform from the adversary's point of view. But all you know about it is that's non-uniform. You don't really know where the good parts are and the bad parts are because the adversary knows something. An example of that would be, you know, a quantum key agreement. You send some bits over fiber and the adversary observes some of them. You're not sure which ones because some of them got messed up in the process, but not enough that you can detect it because there's also natural errors in these things. And so the adversary knows something. Okay? Okay, so W is not uniform. That's a thing to remember. And, of course, there's no secure channel between our two players because else the problem is trivial. Alan will just send R to Bonnie, and that's it. So the channel is leaky to Eve. There's only a public channel. Right, so Eve gets whatever Alan sends. So there's a simple solution to this problem, which is to use an extractor. Now, what's an extractor? Extractor is this little box here. It takes two inputs and gives you one output. And as long as this input W has some min entropy, and I'll denote min entropy by a blue M throughout the talk, then, and you give it a little bit of a uniform seed, then what you'll get out is uniform in the end. Right? Okay. So that's what an extractor is, uniform seed, min entropy input, uniform output. You say, well, this is trivial, just output the seed. The point is that they're actually jointly uniform, the seed and R. So they actually have to get entropy out of M in order to get R, because copying the seed would not work. They wouldn't be jointly uniform. Okay? So that's what an extractor is. And so now that we have one, and I'll talk in a little bit about how to build these things, you know, Alan just takes the W, takes the random I, extracts R, and of course instead of sending R, you send I over, and Bonnie will do the same thing, and now they both share R, and R is uniform, even given I. So from Eve's point of view, R is uniform. Right. So we're done. So the interesting problems arise when we start considering active Eve. So there's Eve, and instead of letting I through, she messes with it and modifies it to get I prime, okay, before forwarding it on. So then, excuse me. Bonnie will get I prime instead of I, extract something different, and so now they don't have a key that matches, and once you start using that kind of key, who knows what happens, right? And maybe Eve finds out everything. So what we need in the property that we need here is called robustness. We need to be robust against active attackers, in other words, not assuming an authenticated channel between the two parties. Okay. So what we want to say is that if I has changed, Bonnie will just refuse to play. Now, why refuse to play is satisfactory? Because if the attacker is active, she can anyway mess things up so that they cannot play. So this is the best we can hope for in some sense. Right? Because if the attacker controls the channel, then she can make it so that they don't play. So all we want to say is that that's exactly what we're going to do if the attacker messes with the message. Okay. And the second problem that we're interested in is what if W is actually noisy? So Alan and Bonnie don't get the exact same copy as happens, for example, in quantum key agreement or key agreement over noisy channels, all sorts of problems that look like this. So there's a W here and a W prime there. So then there's a W prime on the Bonnie's extractor, and so she gets R prime. And what do we want to do here? Well, this W prime is not adversarial. So it only just refused to work. I mean, this is natural noise that happens. We have to deal with it. So what I want to make sure is actually property is called error tolerance, but it was named fuzziness way back, and so now it's going to be fuzziness. What we want is the property that if W prime is reasonably close to W, then we will get back the same R. So that's our setting. We want information theory key agreements in the presence of active adversaries that deals with noisy inputs. Okay. Questions? No? All right. So what we want is a robust fuzzy extractor. Okay, and so here are the properties exactly that we need. One is, so this is just a generalization of extractor. One property is that if you give W and I and you put it through, you will get a uniform string, R, that you can use for your key or whatever else you want it to do with. And you will also get a string P that will help you next time, and the string P will not mess up the randomness of R. Okay. So what is the string P? If you're given some W prime that's close to W, you can put in the P and get back the same R. So in the extractor case that was in the previous slide, this P was just I. Right? You put in the same I, you get the same R. But here P may contain more information than just I, right? Because we need to be able to correct errors. And this thing is actually just a fuzzy extractor that was defined by Evgeny, Rafi, and Adam, and myself a while back. So you may have seen this, but the extra property that we add in this talk is this property called robustness, which is that if Eve sees P and messes with it and gets some other thing called P tilde, then the reproduction procedure will output bottom, will refuse to work, as long as P tilde is not equal to P, right? And there's some probability of error, so with one minus Lagrangian probability over the right things, the reproduction will refuse to play if P tilde is not equal to P. So that's the beast we want. And if we want it, then we can just plug it in and get exactly what we want, the information theory key agreement. So here's, you know, Alan has W, Bonnie has W prime. You put W in here, I in here. You get R and P. That's the generate function of the fuzzy extract of the robust fuzzy extractor. It has the generate and the reproduce. So Alan does the generate, gets R, sends P over to Bonnie. Eve gives P tilde, which may or may not be equal to P. And so now Bonnie will put in her version of W, which is a little different, and the P tilde into the reproduction procedure and get back either R or nothing. Right? So R if P tilde is equal to P, if Eve didn't actually mess with the message, and the bottom otherwise. So given this beast, they could actually do this. And then you can use this R for all sorts of things, whatever you wanted to use R for, encryption, MAC, and so on. Right? So now you can do regular crypto because you have a uniformly random string. So the goal is to get from this noisy, non-uniform string to a uniform string that you can use for whatever. Okay, so a bit of prior work. This was considered before with some restrictions. So started by Maurer and then several papers of Maurer, Renner, and Wolf in various subsets, they considered the non-noisy case if W is not equal, if W is actually equal to W prime, or the case with noise where W and W prime can come from repeated IID distributions, right? So you sample and sample and sample and sample in order to build up the W prime, and the Eve's knowledge about them. And you sample from the same distribution, which is not always the case in life. So this is the sort of restricted noise version. It was also considered using random oracles by Boyan, Dodis, Katz, Ostrovsky, and Smith. So this can be done if you have the magic random oracle. Even that's non-trivial, but unfortunately it requires lots of assumptions. And it was also considered in the interactive setting, first by, again, various subsets of Maurer, Renner, and Wolf, with limitations on errors, the same limitations on errors as here, either no errors or IID distributions. And by, again, the same authors as the random oracles, in using password-authenticated key agreement protocols and lots of rounds and getting only computational security. Okay? So if you want to do this non-interactively and without random oracles and information theoretically secure, then, you know, you have to work. So basically, this thing has not been previously really considered the way we stated. Let me tell you another setting why it's useful. let's say that we have only one user, not the reincarnations of Alice and Bob named Alan and Bonnie, but only one user, who has a noisy key, let's say a biometric, that you actually want to use for cryptography, right? So you want to, I don't know, blink into your computer and it'll scan your retina and magically encrypt your hard disk or decrypt your hard disk. So then robust fuzzy extractor looks like the right primitive. You put in your biometric and you generate a random uniform I and put it into this gen procedure, and out pops a uniform random R and the helper string P. And then you can use your R to do whatever you want to use uniform randomness for. You can derive your public secret key pair from this. You can sign messages and so on, right? So you sort of start really with W to do all these things. And next time you need the same R, right? Let's say you want to, you know, you've encrypted your hard disk the first time. Now you want to decrypt your hard disk. But this is a biometric reading, so it's going to be a little different. You get a W prime. You put in the same P and you get the same R, and now you start playing. But where do you put your P? Well, wait, you have a disk that you're encrypting, so you can put it on the disk and authenticate it. But what do you authenticate it with? You want to authenticate it with R, but you don't have R yet because you need P to derive R. So you get into trouble, right? You don't really have a place to keep your P in a trusted or authenticated storage. You just have to rely on the goodwill of people to keep your P somewhere. So if it changes to some P tilde adversarially, then R will change to some R tilde, and then if you use a different key to decrypt than what you use to encrypt, who knows what's going to happen, right? And maybe it'll leak information, and again, Eve will find everything out. So depending on how you use this R, things may go south, right? So you don't necessarily want to rely on this. So what you want to say is that if P changed, then I'm screwed because I would have been screwed anyway if somebody just deleted it. But if it doesn't change, then I can work, right? So this removes the incentive for the adversary to change the string P. And notice that this is exactly the same problem as we had before. You're doing key agreement. You're agreeing on a key with yourself in the past. Right? You derived some key R to encrypt your hard disk. Then you come back 2 days later to decrypt it. You want to derive the same R. Well, you can't interact with yourself in the past. So this is where non-interactivity is really essential. Right? So Alan and Bonnie could have interacted. Here you really can't interact. So the way we formulate this in terms of just two functions is the right way for this setting. Yeah.
So in other words, the P tilde keeps doing it. If you use an operating point, you can also make it a sort of pattern, right?
That's easy. Right. Absolutely. If you don't have adversarial behavior, if you just are worried about corruptions that are, you know, within limited distance. Actually, even adversarial within limited distance, you can just encode P in an error correcting code, absolutely, and store that. So this is only interesting if Eve is actually adversarial, absolutely. Next. All right. So this is the beast we want. So I've told you two settings where it's useful. You can try to think of others. Now we're going to build it. Okay. So what we need to build are these robust fuzzy extractors, right? Robust means secure against messing with P, and fuzzy means that you can have inputs that are not W and W prime are not necessarily equal, are noisy. Okay. Well, all right, that's too much of a goal. I'll show you how to build robust extractors first, then we'll get to fuzzy. And in fact, before I do that, I'll just show you how to build extractors in case you haven't seen this. This is not new, this is not mine, but it's good to review even if you have. Okay, so there's basically a theorem that's almost folklore, but perhaps Benet, Brassard, and Roberts, and then Pagliazzo, Levin, Luby are the right people to credit with for this theorem that says that universal hash functions introduced way back in the 70s by Cotter and Wegman are actually extractors, just are. If you don't know what universal hash functions are, those are hash functions that are unlikely to result in collisions, no more likely than random functions. And they're easy to build, and I'll just show you one, and because that's the extractor I will use. Okay, so here's the extractor. So let's say that I have my input W that has length n and min entropy m. Okay, so min entropy is blue. What I'm going to do is choose a uniform seed, because that's what extractors have, they have uniform seeds, of the same length as my input. I'll multiply them over, you know, finite field of characteristic 2 of the right size and so on. So now I get an n-bit string, and all I'll do is I'll truncate it to some length lambda. So this notation means take bits 1 through lambda. Okay, so I'll take bits 1 through lambda of the product wi. Okay. This is an extractor. No proof here, but it is. So in fact, jointly I and r will be uniform, or rather epsilon close to uniform, as long as the entropy of the input is slightly greater than the length of the output. Greater by this 2 log 1 over epsilon. So it means if you want to be really close to uniform, you have to pay a bit more here, right? Because log 1 over epsilon will grow. Okay. So, excuse me. So you can essentially extract the entire entropy of this by just this very simple construction, in case you haven't seen it before. Notice, of course, that this is not robust and not fuzzy. If you change W, you know, things go bad. If you change I, things go bad, right? So this is just an extractor, but it's very simple. There's a lot of literature on extractors that basically tries to improve on this, mainly by reducing the length of I. That's really the only improvement you can have, right? So much more sophisticated functions that accomplish very similar goals, but with much shorter I. But we don't care about the length of I for this talk. Okay, so now that you've seen how to build regular extractors, let's try to think about how we can build robust ones. So robust means, again, if you change the seed, we'll detect it, but no error tolerance on the input yet. So here's an idea. Use a regular extractor, and then use a message authenticating code to authenticate the seed. Right, so mac the seed, get some tag sigma, and it seems like we're done. Right, and then you just output your P, which is I and sigma. So then when Bonnie receives this, she checks that the tag is correct. If it is, then she works. If it isn't, then she refuses to. Right? Okay, so we're almost happy, except you start thinking, what is the key that we need to use for this Mac? Macs are not keyless objects. You need to have a secret key. Well, let's see. The only secret key we have is R. We can't use R, because if I changes, then R changes. So who knows what happens? You don't get a Mac with the same key anymore. You have a Mac that you're verifying with a different key than you produce the tag with. So this doesn't help. So the idea is due to Mara Wolf, is to use W itself. W is a secret that the two parties share. And we can try to use that for Macs. But W is not uniform. That's the whole point of this game, right? W is not uniform from the adversary's point of view anyway. So we need Macs that are secure even with non-uniform keys. And if we can get that, then maybe we can build this. And this, again, goes back to Maurer and Wolf. They actually have a Mac that's secure with non-uniform keys, so I'll tell you how it works. Look on. Exactly. This is why this works in the random oracle model. So that's it. Yeah. Even then, the proof is kind of hairy. Because you have to account for, offline. Harry in the fuzzy case. if that makes any sense. Okay, so how do we get a Mac with non-uniform keys? Let's say that our key for the Mac is called AB, consists of two parts, and what we're trying to Mac is the message called I, right, because that's what we're trying to Mac in our game. So you put I, and you multiply it by A, the same multiplication over binary finite field, and then you just add b to it. So Mac with the key a b of I is just a I plus b. Okay. And again, let's denote the length of a and b by n and the entropy of a and b by m. So each of these two things is of length n over 2, and this is sort of, you know, this is one way to draw the entropy. Let's say all the entropy sits on the B side and a little bit spills over on the A side. That's sort of one way to look at it. There's a theorem, again, Mara-Wolf, that says that security is going to be M minus N over 2. So however much of a spillover you have, that's how much security you get. not only if the randomness is distributed this way. No matter how the randomness is distributed, you get security at least M minus N over 2. So another useful variable is the entropy gap, which is the part that doesn't have entropy. So N minus M, I'll call the entropy gap. I'll denote it in red because it's not a good thing. The more gap you have, the less entropy you have, right? So another way to express security is that it's N over 2 minus G. That's just sort of an obvious tautology. And the part to remember is that you get security from this part, from the spillover over N over 2. Okay. So I'm not proving this. But it is true, and it's not terribly hard to prove. So now we know how to build robust extractors. The construction is due tomorrow. Wolf. You put W here, you put W here, you extract from W using I, and you mac I using W. But we get a little bit of secularity. I extracts from W, W authenticates I. How in the world do you prove that this is secure? Well, so instead of doing this, we actually use independent parts of W. That's the Marowolf construction. Use 1/3 of W to extract and 2/3 of W to max. So you split your W into three parts, A, B, and C, of length n over 3 each. You extract from here using I, right from the last part. And you use the first two things to mac. Now, okay, so let's think about this. How much entropy do we need in order to extract? Well, if we have less than 2/3 of the entropy, C might have no entropy at all in it. Right? So we wouldn't extract anything. So we need at least 2/3 in order to extract. So we mac I using these two parts of W. And again, in order for this to have more than, you know, to be more than half entropic, we need 2/3 entropy, right? Because security comes from the spillover. So basically, for both things, we need m to be greater than 2n over 3. And we extract, if you just do the math, is roughly m minus 2n over 3 bits. So the entropy has to be at least 2/3 of the string length, and this is how much you extract, m minus 2n over 3. Okay. So that's what was done before us. Can we do better is a reasonable question, and the idea is that actually forget about using independent parts of W. Let's use the circularity to our advantage. Instead of trying to avoid it, let's actually try to prove the circular thing secure. Okay. So we'll actually use circularity. I'll show you how exactly in a minute, and we'll do better than this. We won't actually use independent parts of W. Okay. So just so that you remember, the notation is the length of W is n, its min entropy is m blue, and it's n, and the difference is the gap is g. So here's our construction. We take W, and we also split it into two parts, unequal lengths. V is some parameter we'll figure out later. So n minus V and V are the two parts. Okay. We take I, that's our seed, and we multiply it by A, and we truncate it. So how do we truncate it? So this is the same product as we did for extractors before. This is A times I. Okay, so the length of A times I is n minus V bits. Because A is n minus V bits. This goes from V plus 1 to n minus V. So we take all but the first V bits. So we chop off the first V bits. That's all. Okay. Now what we also do is we take this, the first V bits, and we add them to B. So we don't waste anything, right? This, the last bits go to the extraction. The first bits go to the MAC, V of them. And that's our MAC. So this is the entire construction. You do one product, you compute AI, you split it, this is the part you extract, and then you add a little bit to the other part, you call that your MAC. Okay. So let's try to analyze this. Of course, I won't go through the full proof, but roughly it goes like this. To prove extraction, what you need to show is that R is uniform even given sigma. That sigma does not ruin the uniformity of R. So we look at AI plus B because R and sigma jointly look like AI plus B, where B is short and AI is long. And this is still a universal hash family. You just prove that without too much trouble. And then by roughly the Impaliazzo-Levin Ruby result, you have that this is an extractor. So they will be jointly uniform. R and sigma will be jointly uniform. And you play with the parameters a little bit, you realize that what you need for uniformity is that this V be slightly greater than the entropy gap. So you need the entropy to extend a little bit, guaranteed entropy to extend a little bit into the B part. Why? Well, roughly because, look, you've got n minus V bits. That's really how many bits you have, right? Because you have, you have V to n minus V and then 1 to V. So you have total n minus V bits. So as long and if you n minus v is bigger than n, slightly smaller than entropy, you'll be okay. So this is going to be uniform if v is a little bigger than the entropy gap. Okay. Simply because this is an extractor where I is the key and W is the input. And the analysis of robustness is basically to say that the sigma part is two-wise independent hash function, which implies that it's a MAC even with non-uniform keys, just the same way that Mara Wolf did it. So this is going to be delta secure. Again, if V is slightly bigger than the entropy gap, again, bigger by the parameter related to the security of the MAC that you want to get. Remember, that's where the security comes from, right? From that spillover. So we need to set V to be roughly the entropy gap, just a tiny bit more, and we'll be secure. So how many bits do we get? We get N minus V again, right? So N minus 2V bits is how much we extract, which is roughly N minus 2 gaps. Okay. Another way to put it is 2 times M minus N over 2. Just do the arithmetic. Okay. How good is this? Well, let's think about it. The total amount of randomness is N minus gap. So the most you could hope to extract is N minus gap. We lose another gap. Right? In particular, this implies that for our construction, the strings have to be at least half entropic. Before they had to be at least two-thirds entropic, now they have to be at least half entropic. And unfortunately, you can't do better than this. There's a theorem of Dodis and Spencer that says, implies with a little bit of work, that basically M greater than N over 2 is absolutely necessary. There's no avoiding this. So you need strings that have half of their entropy in order to... up to 2 log of epsilons, right, yeah, exactly. So depending on the application, but in reality, you probably care about having epsilon roughly equal to delta, so it's really the 2 here that'll be bad, because there's a 2 here and no 2 there. Okay, so if you have any less entropy, we can't extract, and before people are able to do M minus 2/3, and we do M minus N over 2, and then we have a factor of 2 here. So, right, we do better both by subtracting less and then getting a factor of 2. So what we have built are robust fuzzy extractors, right, with a very simple construction. This is another way to look at it. W is the key for the MAC, and I is the key to the extractor, and they work with each other, right? W, I extracts from W, and W authenticates I, and the construction is really simple. That's all it is. And so now the question is how to make it fuzzy. So how do we make this construction that is already tolerant to active attacks on P also tolerant to some noise in W? Well, all right, so there's a tool for this coming from the paper that was like this, the Dodis, Ostrowski, Raisin, Smith fuzzy extractors paper. The tool is called a secure sketch. And here's what this thing does. And I won't tell you too much about how it works, but here it is. Given a string W, you can push it through this box called S, and the box will output S of W. That will be helpful next time you have something that's close to W but not quite. And that helpful thing is that, so you put in this close thing called W prime, you put the sketch in to the recover procedure, and out comes W back. Okay. So notice that the sketch is k bits, where k is relatively small compared to n, so you're not revealing all the information there was in W. And, of course, what does close mean? Well, close depends on the metric. So for the Hamming metric, S of W can just be a linear function, and if you know what a syndrome of a code is, then it's just a syndrome of a code. And if you don't worry about it. It's just a k-bit linear function from n bits to k bits. So S of W is just a syndrome of a n minus k to t plus 1 binary error-correcting code, where t is the amount of errors you want to tolerate. So if you want to tolerate 2t errors, you need a code of distance to t plus 1. That's not surprising. The syndrome was of length k. If the code looks like this, that's also not surprising, so this is the right thing. In fact, this construction was known well before our paper. So this is the secure sketch that we need. Okay, so now I'm ready to show you how to build robust fuzzy extractors. Take our W. That's the construction that we already have. Now we need to add error tolerance to it. So what do? Well, we just take the sketching procedure that outputs little sketch S, and we map the sketch with everything else. Okay. So this is Mac with the key W that we already know how to do of I and now also S. S is the new thing. Before we just mapped I, now we also map the sketch. And then as part of P, we output I, S, and sigma. And so a few questions arise. First of all, how do we MAC longer messages? Well, I told you how to MAC I haven't told you how to MAC anything longer. This is fairly simple and known tricks. Do this. You just remember that our MAC was AI plus B. Now we'll just add another term, A squared S plus AI plus B. You say, well, how do you guarantee that S fits into the length that you've allotted to this? I can't. So if it doesn't, if A squared is not enough, I'll split us into parts and do A cubed times one part plus A squared times another part, or so on. Just get some polynomial, and that's what, this all works. Okay, so the MAC is easy to modify. Just add this a few of these terms. So let's think about how do you, the receiver on the other end, what does the receiver do? Well, let's see. She gets W prime and S. Does the sketch recover procedure and gets W. Right? That's what the recover procedure does. So then she takes I, which is also in this string P, right, and pushes all of that through the extractor that we already have for our construction and gets R out. So that all works, and then now she needs to verify that things were okay, that nobody messed with P. So this looks all right. You just put, you know, I, S, and the key to the verification procedure of the MAC, which is just recompute the MAC and see if it matches. And you get okay or not okay. All right, so now let's say that our Eve messed with P, in particular, messed with S. P contains S, right? So messed with the sketch. Well, you say that's great because, you know, W will get changed, so R will get changed, but no problem because S will get changed, and so we will detect this at the MAC verification because the MAC won't verify because S is different. Wait a second. The key to the MAC has now changed because W has changed. W is no longer what the original W was because the recover procedure can't recover it because the sketch is different. Right? So we have the wrong key, and so what the MAC tells us is complete BS, right? It's not useful for anything. Because the MAC verification is working with a key that's different than the MAC was computed from. So we get again to the circularity problem. We're trying to authenticate the sketch S using a key that depends on the sketch S. Because to recover the key, we need the sketch. Right? The key is W. Okay, so we're stuck. And so what do we do about this? So let's look at the MAC again. This is the MAC. I'm just writing out the equation. It's A squared S plus AI truncated to V bits plus B. And what's the verification? The verification problem is like this. You have a W prime that's different, and an S tilde that's different. So you compute a W tilde that's different, and now you're trying to verify a MAC of the wrong thing with the wrong key and see if it's still okay. All right, so the problem is the circularity that I talked about. All right, here's an observation, and this observation just comes from linearity. If you know the difference between W prime and W, not that anybody does, but if you did, and you know the difference between S tilde and S, then because I said that sketching is a linear function for the purposes that we're interested in, you will figure out the difference between W tilde and W. So if you know how this changed and you know how this changed, then you know how this changed. So let's call that thing delta W. Okay. So what we need then is that for every fixed delta W, given the tag, it's hard to forge a new tag with a key that differs by delta W from the original key. And delta W is fairly restricted from the adversary's point of view, because you don't allow arbitrary errors in W. That would be way too many, right? You could just go everywhere. We're only allowed to stay within the Hamming ball. And the adversary knows this part completely, because it was she who modified S to S tilde. So delta W is fairly limited. And as long as we can prove this for every delta W, we're okay. How do we get such a Mac? Well, there's a little bit of magic, and if you add an A to the fifth term, it works. And for this one, you have to believe me. You say, well, it looks like we ought to add A to the fourth. It doesn't work because we're working over characteristic two. We really need A to the fifth. And any more than this, I'll have to explain offline. Hey, but if you look at this Mac and you put in any, okay, so delta W leads to delta A, because W consists of A and B, right? If you look at any fixed delta W, that is, well, for zero delta W, we're back to the original case. If you look for any non-zero delta W, this still remains a non-zero polynomial in A, and therefore everything is okay. That's the rough argument why this works, because non-zero delta W leads you to a non-zero polynomial in A, no matter what. Okay? So that's all I'm going to say about this, except the trivial modification to the Mac, I mean, trivial to implement, not so trivial to prove, actually does what you want. So this hard to forge for any fixed delta W, then you enumerate over all delta W's, there are not that many of them, and therefore it's hard to forge overall. Okay, so this is the construction. It's actually quite a simple construction. It's exactly what I said before, except you have to use a much more clever Mac than before. Okay, so let's see how much we extract. So without, if we didn't have errors, if this S didn't exist, then that's how much we get. We get N minus two gaps. Another way to look at it is that we extract all the min entropy we could minus the entropy gap. Okay. There's a little bit of a problem. The sketch, which is now public, reveals k bits of information about W. Because that's what the sketch does. It reveals information about W. So there are two problems. One is that the entropy of W from the adversary's point of view is now decreased. The other is that the entropy gap has increased. Well, they're the same problem, but they're really two of them because we subtract. Right, so we lose k twice. We lose k on the decrease of this and on the increase of this, where k is the amount of information that the sketch will reveal about your key. So we don't want to lose 2k. Well, we can't avoid decreasing the entropy because we are revealing information about W in order to correct errors. There's no avoiding that. But we can avoid increasing the gap. How do you do that? By reducing the length, because the gap is the length of the thing minus the entropy, right? So we can reduce the length, and the way we reduce the length is by realizing that the sketch is linear, so we can just compute the orthogonal, specifically the orthogonal, the complement of the linear function, right? The sketch is some linear map, completed to full rank, and that completion is what we will use instead of the original W, and that's shorter, that's n minus k bits already. But it has the same entropy, because the only part that we excised from it is the part that was public already anyway, the sketch. So instead of using W as the key, we will use C, which is the projection of W onto the complement space. And then we won't increase the gap G. We will only decrease the min entropy. All right, so after we do all of these things, if you didn't follow them anyway, that's okay, because the point is that if you're given a binary code that can correct t errors, and it's linear, as most codes are anyway, we can extract this many bits. This is as before, m minus n over 2. Also minus k, because we have to lose that due to the sketch of W. And also two logs of the Hamming ball volume that we really don't have to lose if the errors are independent. If there, it depends on the error model, but this is the most general statement. Okay. That's for Hamming errors. You can generalize this construction to the case when W is actually a set instead of a Hamming string, I mean binary string, and the errors are changes in the set. So imagine that your password is the set of your favorite movies, right? And then next time you come back, you forgot one of your favorite movies and you now have a new favorite movie, but the set hasn't changed that much. So that's the setting we're interested in. So W is a subset of a huge universe, like size 2 to the alpha. Not something you can enumerate, all alphabet strings or something. And your original set was this, your new set is that. We can also handle such errors, and the number of bits we managed to extract is again m minus n over 2, this is as before, times 2, minus this thing, 3t alpha. Okay? where, again, T is the number of errors you want to correct, and alpha is the length, the size of your universe. And that's based on a construction in the fuzzy extractor space. Okay. So that's what we managed to do. Okay. So let's look at the single user setting again. Now that we have these constructions, the user can apply the extractor, derive a key, get the key R to encrypt the hard disk, then apply the construction again, and so on. And then you start thinking, well, what does Eve know in order to be able to modify P? Well, she knows P because that's stored publicly, but she also sees some effects of the user's use of the key R. And if the use is arbitrary, then the effects are arbitrary. So how do we know that she doesn't use those effects in order to modify P? We always assume that R was secret from Eve, but maybe it's not so secret, right, because it's being used. So in some settings where Eve sees the use of R before she has an opportunity to modify the string that you're using to recover R, we actually need to have a stronger robustness notion. We need to model the side effects that Eve sees of the use of R. And the way we model it is, in the most general sense, we just give her R. And that's what we call post-application robustness. What we saw before was pre-application robustness, where she doesn't see any applications. This is the interactive key agreement. She doesn't see any applications. She just sees P going by. And so we defined this notion. It wasn't considered before, and you really have to consider it if you see some side effects. And it turns out that the construction I presented still works, but unfortunately, you have to only extract one-third of the bits that we could extract before. Okay? And it would be nice to improve this. That's a good problem to try to do. So this is something I just sort of want to make people aware that when you consider this setting, you have to consider pre-application versus post-application carefully. Okay. One last thing in, what, I have 5 minutes? Yeah. Oh, God, you're asking me a question I have no answer to. No idea, rather. Right, so nobody knows. The truth is that nobody knows the entropy of biometrics because you only have, 6 billion people? Right. How do you measure entropy? I don't know. Biometric inputs. I have no idea how to measure these things, honestly. So, fingerprints are bad. Irises are not so great. Retinas tend to be better. The belief is wildly exaggerated, from what I understand, and I have no idea what it actually is. But everything I heard made me unimpressed. So actually, I don't like biometric. I like quantum as an application for this thing a lot more, because people are actually using quantum channels to agree on keys. Right. You need quite a lot of entropy to get something. Yes. What we have is a bound that says you can't do any better anyway. You need m minus n over 2, right? So m has to be greater than, or the entropy has to be greater than half the length. And there's no avoiding that in this setting. If you want to avoid that, you have to go to the interactive setting. There's simply nothing you can do. I'm exaggerating. Information theoretically, there's nothing you can do. Without random oracles, there's nothing you can do. Computationally, I have no idea. I don't think anybody has any idea. Okay, so if you're willing to live with computational assumptions, then maybe you can do better. But I don't know the answer. But information theoretically, there isn't anything. That's sort of the Dodd-Spencer bound on Macs that says the string has to be at least half entropic in order to get a Mac. You can generalize this to the setting. Does that make sense? But I think the quantum setting is much better because there only a few bits got corrupted and a few bits got absorbed by the adversary, because if too many did, then you just give up anyway. So there you do have more than half the entropy. Yeah? Again, I don't know. It's not even clear how to measure the thing, right? What is entropy of a biometric? I mean, there's 6 billion people right now. You measure each of them. They're all different. What's the entropy? Who knows? Right? I mean, what is the experiment by which you can confirm it? You have to make lots of babies and measure them? I don't know, right? It's not clear. Right. I'm really unqualified to answer these questions, other than I don't like any answers I've seen. Okay. Other questions? So I don't know if I'll. Well, let me tell you what else you can do with these things, and I probably won't go into the details of the last thing I want to say. This has a nice application to another. Speaking of applications, right? Biometrics I don't know anything about, but bounded storage model is much nicer because it's all theoretical. So what's the bounded storage model? In case you haven't seen it, it's there's this huge string X that Eve can't. The adversary doesn't even know all of it, right? So there's constant stream of stuff being broadcast at you by some satellite. Nobody can store. And Alice and Bob have a secret key, and they want to use their access to the string X in order to agree on a long secret key, or keep agreeing on secret keys that they can use for maximum encryption and so on. Right, so what they do is they use the secret key to sample the string a little bit. It's broadcast by satellite, so there's a bit of a noise. So, you know, there's Alice gets W and Bob gets W prime. But they're almost the same thing. There's just a few Hamming errors. Eve doesn't know where Alice and Bob sampled, so W has entropy. That's the view of this. There's lots of prior work on this model, started by Maurer, continued by lots of people. Probably this current view is mostly due to Liu, the view of the sample then extract version of it. The noisy case was considered by Ding and by Dodis Smith, but they could only handle either passive adversaries or stateful Alice and Bob, meaning they had to keep synchronized state each time they changed their keys. And if you look at just robust fuzzy extractors, you automatically get stateless Alice and Bob and active Eve security. Because, well, Alice just applies the robust fuzzy extractor, right, sends P over. If Eve is active, we don't care because robustness protects against that. And Bob just recovers R using, I mean, it's the same thing, right, the same setting as before. But parameters are not great. As somebody pointed out, we only work if the string is half entropic, so what are you going to do? Because Eve may store a lot of information, may not be half entropic. Here you can do actually a lot better because Alice and Bob have the secret key, which they didn't in the previous setting. So what we need is the same picture you saw at the very beginning of the talk, but everybody has a secret key. And the problem becomes much simpler, and we can actually do with a lot less fraction of entropy if everybody has the secret key. Okay. But the secret key must be reusable. It's not like Alice and Bob have lots of secret keys. They have one secret key they're going to reuse over and over and over and over in order to remain stateless and do this. Is there a question? They're sampling this huge random satellite broadcast stream. They both have a secret key that tells them where to sample. What to sample. Yeah, that's the point of the secret. They don't... Because I'm in Australia and you're here and we just don't hear the same stuff exactly. I mean, error correcting codes don't necessarily help because the string is being broadcast by somebody. It's not like you can encode it because that somebody may not be under your control. You know, it's quasars and stuff. Okay. So it turns out you can do it, and I don't have time to tell you how, but you can do it very cheaply and easily using these two very cool things that you're just going to have to ask me about. But basically, if you use almost universal functions and two white independent functions, it all works out. And in the end, you need a thing that is both an extractor and a Mac, which is sort of cute because we've not had this before. Okay? And so, unfortunately, I'm out of time, so I won't tell you this. But here's the moral of the story. What we've got is two cases, the keyed case and the keyless case. In the keyless case, so the case without errors, we actually simply managed to extract more than before, and essentially maybe you could extract more. We have no proof that you can't extract more. Maybe, you know, this 2 should become 2.5 or 3 or something. We don't know. But we know for sure that you can't do any better if the string is less than half entropic. Okay. The case with errors we managed to do without random oracles for Hamming distance and set difference metrics. And there's a new definition of post-application robustness, and the first constructions that actually satisfy that definition, which is stronger. And for the keyed case, it actually results in a useful new notion that I didn't have time to talk about, which is an extractor Mac, a Mac that is also an extractor. And it has applications to bounded storage model with errors, with lots of adjectives. Okay, so that's it.